The title of this presentation is Biochar Effects on Switchgrass Establishment and Runoff Losses of Nutrients. And with that, Derek?
Well, those of you that know me know that I'm not Derek. Derek is one of our students that has moved on to a new job and couldn't be here today. I'm Tony Provin. My co-authors on Derek's presentation, it's a little strange given somebody else's slide set. Don Vieter, recently retired from Texas A&M, in Ag Engineering, Clyde Munster. Jay Wise and Matthew Keogh. We'll do the keyboard old-fashioned. A lot of this is background from the standpoint. Our focus has primarily been on pyrolysis biochars from the standpoint of a focus at Texas A&M toward development of liquid condensable transportation fuels. And going through this from the biochar standpoint, we've been primarily interested in using agronomic feedstocks. We have a large breeding program for the sorghum biomass crops at Texas A&M. And our concern really has been replacement of nutrients in these systems. Others have shown positive responses to biochar applications to soil. Some of our previous work has not been that positive from a yield standpoint. And subsequently, we elected to use a greenhouse study where we could look at some very key fundamental components in a very small plot focused approach. And with this, some of the interests that we have are, particularly with our soils in central Texas, where microbial activity is pretty much occurring 24/7 as long as we have a little bit of moisture, is what type of physical and chemical property changes that we'll see with modestly high rates of biochar application. A lot of interest in switchgrass through the region from the standpoint of a perennial grass that would be established, and with that we often have very great difficulties getting good switchgrass establishment through this region of Texas simply because of sealing of the soil surface and that. And then obviously what type of nutrient uptake can we see from the biochar applications that we apply out there. With that in mind, we also have 300 plus different stream segments in the state of Texas that are registered as nutrient limiting waterways. So we're always cognizant of the application of these materials. Are we going to run into a potential escalation in nutrient losses? So the experimental design was essentially looking at four rates of biochar. And those rates are modestly high compared to what a number of others have done before us. One of the aspects that we're looking at is, and we get into the application technology for this biochar. Particle densities in some of our biochars have been running around 0.15 to 0.2, and that has been a fundamental issue. How do we apply this? What technology, how do you apply 3 or 4 tons per acre, particularly in our environment? And these rates were derived from the standpoint of an estimate that we'd have about 25% biochar recovery as far as mass basis, and then the application rates where we'd stack multiple acres of biomass production, the biochar would go back on that in a sequential manner year after year after year. We used a auger-fed slow pyrolysis system set at 550 degrees Celsius. And the scenario was also, in this case, is what happens if we have biochar in addition to supplemental N, P, and K that we normally would put into these systems through replicates and a complete replicated design. And the stainless steel lysimeters, as you can see in the lower picture there, in a greenhouse setting. Now, we used Alamo switchgrass, which created a few issues, and we'll go along there. The initial approach was to use a rainfall simulator at two different time frames, that being at 50% leaf cover of the surface and 100% cover. We really anticipated with the soils that were one of the two soils that we're using that we would have a significant amount of leaching. These lysimeter boxes are designed for both runoff and leaching, and we applied essentially reverse osmosis water, relatively high quality water, at 8 minute increments, 3 times in a row, and looked at the runoff and leaching, both the nutrient concentrations as well. The biochar that was generated was derived from sorghum biomass crops, and we got an appreciably higher biochar yield than we normally would consider. In this case, for this run, it was 39% by mass was recovered. and an astonishing amount of potassium recovery for a lot of the other studies that we've done. Literally 100% recovery, conservation of the potassium from the initial feedstock remained in the biochar. We did lose a little phosphorus and a significant amount of nitrogen. Having said this, we see a number of publications showing relatively high surface areas. Our surface area of this particular biochar was modestly low, around 12 meters squared per gram. The approach was to incorporate the biochar at these four different rates fully throughout the soil. And Derek elected to use, when we at the end of the study, we actually segmented using a 4-inch core, took bulk density, other chemical methods, and segregated that into a 0 to 5, 5 to 15 centimeter depths. This is the 0 to 5. The 15, or 5 to 15 was very similar to this. So you look at bulk density here in the Boonville soil. This is a sandy loam soil, relatively low in organic matter, as you might expect in this southern part of the state. A neutral or non-calcareous, slightly alkaline soil. The alkalinity comes from some of the sodium that we have in our environment in this area because of historic marine deposits. Bulk density at these rates, no significant differences until we get fairly high rates. Again, this is after just a couple months of application. And as you notice, we go from essentially 1.3 grams per centimeter, and then we get to the 64 megagram rate, whether it be with the fertilizer it added or after. You know, again, this is at the conclusion of the greenhouse lysimeter study. We see a significant decrease in bulk density. pH, because of the oxides that are present, we feel that there are, based on X-ray diffraction patterns and some other evidence we have, a significant amount of calcium oxides that are present in these biochars. And we see the pH, once again, does escalate, particularly in this lightly buffered soil. Soil organic carbon really goes up quite a bit as we get those rates elevated. And then, as Mr. Wise was talking about potassium extraction using Malix-3 by ICP, we see a very substantial increase in soil test extracted potassium. Well, you keep that in mind as we look at a little bit of the uptake data later on. The Burleson, essentially similar news there. We don't see that significant change in bulk density until we get those relatively high rates of biochar. Similar to that also with soil organic carbon, as well as the change in soil test data that you see there with the potassium. One of the fundamental problems that we are experiencing with biochar incorporation, particularly, and it's most observable in our light textured sandier soils, is segregation of the biochar. Because of the particle density differences, as well as the particle size differences, we really battle a lot of problems keeping the biochar incorporated and preventing it from floating off in the environment. And this is an example of the surface of the Boonville soil. The other soil, the Burleson, a little less problematic, part of which is because it is a heavy clay soil. And in many cases, I believe we're just not observing the segregation because the color differences are not as great as we would have in the Boonville soil. You also notice that the switchgrass looks a little anemic. We ran into some significant problems, particularly as we have started to apply higher rates of biochar, particularly with the emergence of switchgrass in our lighter textured soils. Here's a good example of that in the lysimeter boxes. As you can notice that the 64 megagram treatment is a little less cover than we normally would like to have. And this brought on a follow-up portion of this presentation looking at what is literally happening to suppress this emergence. Biomass production, obviously if you don't have emergence, you don't have biomass production. And we really see that here. As you go across looking at the blue lines there, that being the Boonville, the sandier soil, we really did not have a significant impact to biochar from a control to the 4 or 16 megagram application rates. And then we had the severe suppression there with the 64. You notice from the standpoint of the NPK additions, there was a significant factor from the input of nitrogen, suggesting that the biochar itself had no nitrogen contribution to the system. As we look at the Burleson, clay soil, approximately 45% clay, we don't see a lot of really changes without the addition of nutrients, as far as particularly the nitrogen. And from a biomass production standpoint, really no significant differences within the two different source regimes, that being biochar only or biochar with additional nutrients. And the aspect of the Burleson soil, we did not see that suppression. We didn't see any observable differences between the different treatments within the lysimeter boxes. Nutrient uptake, we saw that significant increase in potassium soil test K with biochar application. However, obviously with the Boonville, if you did not produce any biomass, you don't take up any nutrients, and you see that. So there was really very limited differences within the two nutrient regimes, that being biochar and biochar with additional nutrients. So we don't really see a fundamental change in nutrient uptake between those. However, obviously, if you do apply additional fertilizer nutrients, you will see a slight increase from those, or in this case, a very significant increase both with nitrogen and potassium. The Burleson, fairly similar results, different magnitude there on the y-axis. And once again, the addition of the nitrogen is a synergistic effect toward additional uptake of P and K because of increased biomass production. So this is where we're really getting at. We're applying biochar. What is the nutrient availability of this? Soil test data would suggest very significant increases in both phosphorus and potassium. We've only presented potassium up to this point. And when we start calculating what the contribution from the uptake of into the above-ground biomass tissue, what contribution came from the biochar, we pretty much see that with the exception of some K here in the low buffered low potassium containing Boonville soil, that we really have no contribution of the biochar to phosphorus and nitrogen. A little bit from the K when we don't have any additional supplemental K. When we apply supplemental K, we effectively find no observable increase in K from the biochar itself. Burleson, a little bit different story there. This soil would be typically thought to be without any deficiency potentials for potassium because of its high clay content. And as you look at those numbers there, once again, the N, P, and K from contribution from the biochar, when it's applied by itself, essentially would be considered naught. There's nothing there. The poor emergence issues were really quite an issue. So Derek went into the laboratory, did exactly what we said, and found no problems whatsoever when we had studies within the laboratory. That really made us backtrack a little bit and evaluate why were we seeing those problems. Some of the thoughts were that we have high salts in the biochar, we have residual oils and tars. We both did an acetone extraction to remove oils, water to washes to remove salts, and did both of those, continued that. And within the laboratory, no problem whatsoever. Went to the greenhouse, it's a little cooler, no problem whatsoever. Then I came back and said, hey, it was hot when we, really hot when we tried to do this initially in the greenhouse. Applied external heat source in this time frame, and you can see we duplicated the results we had the original time. What was occurring? We had pH increases a couple weeks after seeding that were approaching pH 10. We also had a very significant increase in salinity, because we have a net transpiration drawing the salts up to the surface where the germinating seeds would be and subsequent emergence. Where we didn't have the biochar, you notice we have that about 65% emergence as we'd expect. Nutrient runoff, and I'm running out of time here. Derek had a lot of slides. But effectively, we have to treat biochar like we would treat a manure. It is a source of potential runoff, particularly as we get these higher rates. Even though we weren't taking it up in plant tissue, we do see it being phosphorus and potassium going into the liquid fraction. And let's see, we'll move on to that, kind of go to the summary aspect. Our yields at this point in time, our biggest concerns are salt and pH changes, particularly in our light textured soils. And we have to be very concerned about nutrient management and the application prevention of runoff issues within this. A few updates that we're working on right now is looking at how these biochar fine materials may migrate through our coarser textured soils. Do I have any time left?
Unfortunately not.
Unfortunately not.
Yep.
So.